Network Automation Nerds Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Network Automation Nerds Podcast, a podcast about network automation, network engineering, Python, and other technology topics. I'm your host, Eric Cho. Today on the show, I'm excited to talk to Roel Dionisio again. In part one of our conversation, and we'll have a link in the show notes, we talked about his contacts, all the projects, and the various hats that he wears. And if you haven't listened to part one, it's a lot. So I encourage you to go back and kind of know the origin story. And in part two, we're going to dive a little bit deeper into the various projects. And we're going to talk about more about wireless, which is Roel's specialty. So welcome back to the show, Roel.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so we talked about, I think where we left off in part one is about your Claire Toussaint podcast and your company that you founded. You've always had side projects. And one thing that I've been very impressed about is your building public mindset. If I go on to your blog site, which is roeldionisio.com/blog, I could see, you know, the latest blog post as of the time we're recording was how I made 132,026 last quarter. And, you know, it gets very detailed. You went into your profit margin, your Q4 goals, and how you approach this business. Yeah. And I mean, you still have a full-time job. So this is very, very impressive on how you're able to manage to do this.
Yeah, I have to pull it up now. Okay,
it's been a few months, right? But I mean, truth be told, that's how I was introduced to your content. Is I was like, okay, oh my god, this guy actually published his earnings and his wins and as well as his losses, right? So, tell us about that.
Yeah. So the idea first started about just writing in a business context, like, I'm running this consulting business. What does it take to run it as a kind of a very, very small team? There's only two of us. Yeah. And what are the things that we do? What kind of processes do we put into place? And then I had this idea of, what if I posted financial numbers? Like,
oh my God, that's scary. Yeah.
It's definitely scary. And it definitely gave me that imposter syndrome because I'm like, not sure how people would react to this kind of thing. I could either motivate people or I will turn off a lot of people.
Really? Okay. I for one was the one that was motivated, right? Because I'll let you go into it, but like we talked about off camera, you know, you hear about all these big, huge wins, right? Hundreds of millions of dollars raised, tens of millions of dollars raised. But now here I am trying to make ends meet, right? I'm trying to make enough to cover my hosting fee for the podcast, right?
Yeah. No, that's exactly what I was trying to do with the podcast too. And the podcast falls under the Packet 6. It's kind of a Packet 6 operating as Claire Toussaint. Mm-hmm. And the idea of building in public, as you say, is just one, it documents kind of my journey. Mm-hmm. And as I write about it, it includes like what I've learned and what I did wrong to try and then try to correct that to make a better next quarter. So I try to publish it on a quarterly basis. I'm already behind for quarter two. I printed out my profit and loss statements. I probably stacked it somewhere under some other papers, but I have a plan to write it out. And it's really just showing like, here's what I've learned on the business side of things. Cause very, very much a technical person, but when you run a business, and for anyone who wants to do their own consulting business, you are no longer a technical person. You're a business person. And right. So you have to change your mindset and not only be a technical person, but now you have to learn how to speak in a way that decision makers and managers can understand and make sense.
Right.
And so usually, like if you think of it from your own perspective, when a vendor comes to sell to you, right? They're not putting the network engineer first. They're trying to put a salesperson in front first to kind of describe the solution. And then eventually you talk to a technical person, right?
Right.
You have vetted that, yeah, this is something I want to move forward with. So usually we're in that role. Like, okay, we're now the technical person talking to another technical person. And so I had to change my mind shift and go, okay, let me think more numbers. Let me think more strategically. And then create processes around certain things and then learn how to talk, walk, and act in front of decision makers.
Right, right. I like that because I'm the same way. You know, when you try to sell books, you know, you're trying to explain the benefits, right? Like, you're not really trying to get into what the book is about. You're trying to tell people, why does it matter to you? Just like this podcast, you know, why does it matter to you? Why do you want to spend your commute hours or your gym hours listening to us? This is this is why. So that's a totally different mindset when you're trying to find that maybe podcast market fit or product market fit. And now you're trying to look at from a sustainability point of view where you do have to make a profit. So I like the fact that in the blog, you always talk about optimizing for net profit. Do you want to just dive a little bit into that?
Yeah, the reason why I started talking about net profit more is because in the financial world, when we hear about stocks and earnings reports, it's always about revenue, right? It's
like, exactly.
You know, this company made X amount revenue year over year, quarter over quarter, it's up X percent. And when you run a business, revenue is not the full picture. Revenue is just what you've made, sold, and somebody paid you. But you still have things like operational expenses. There's like rent you have to pay. There's software that you have to pay monthly, other fees you have to pay, right? And then after you take all the invoices that have been paid minus all the expenses you've paid, then you have the net profit, like what is left over, right? And including in the expenses is like salary, right? So however much a company has to pay their employees. And so at the end of the quarter, I always look at, all right, how much did I get, like the company got to keep after paying everything?
Right.
And so, and when I run a business, it's more like an experiment. I'm like, okay, let me try this software, see if this helps. Let me try this little trinket, see if that does anything better.
Yeah.
Let me see where I can eliminate this for something more inexpensive. So it's like a little different experiments I try to run since it's not my primary job, right? It's not my full-time job. So I have a lot of leeway there and I can take on more risk.
Yeah.
Because it's not like I have nothing to fall back on, right?
Yeah. And I think that's the key where it's just, this is kind of an experiment. So it's fun for you to kind of pull different levers. And like you said, I mean, your top line, which is your revenue, is only part of that story. I mean, I remember way back in my undergrad, I was a finance major and we do case studies on, you know, why companies fail, bankruptcies, and so on, file for Chapter 11. Most of the time, they're still balance sheet positive, right? They still have more assets than liabilities. But what get them into trouble is they're short on cash flow and they couldn't cover their short-term liability. Whereas, you know, on paper, they still have assets. And that goes into a lot of these crypto failures where on paper, they still have more asset than liability, but they don't have the cash flow. And once they start selling their so-called asset, the value is going to degrade really quickly.
Yeah, exactly. And once you start getting into business and learning about these reports that you generate, like I use QuickBooks, so these reports are easy to just pull up. Once you have those, then you understand like how other companies operate. And so even when learning what one company charges for the same type of service you provide, you don't know how much of that they actually get to keep.
Right.
So there's so much that's involved.
Yeah. And like, even if you make the same revenue top line, the costs are different, right? Your cost of goods sold. So you may be manufacturing in somewhere that is, you know, outside of the US, whereas in somebody might be have a higher labor cost or whatnot. So for us, you know, maybe when we're selling virtual products, the cost is not significant, but when you're selling something that have the cost associated with it, then that becomes another story where you very unlikely that you get to know that whole picture unless they're a public company and they have to publish it.
Right. And then most companies are private, so they don't even mention it. So even if I looked at my competitors, I don't know how much they're making. I don't know how much they get to keep. So how much do they get to invest back into themselves? Yeah. What their expenses are for certain things, right?
Yeah.
It has a benefit that we don't even have an office. So it's not like I have to pay lease somewhere and that's where most of my money goes to. But at the same time, I'm not actively doing sales, right? So I don't have a sales cycle. Doing any cold sales. It's all referral based.
Which is awesome. I mean, I think that goes into another business concept of your customer acquisition cost, right? Like it's always really high and you know, your lifetime value of your customer, it's really better. Let's just summarize this. It's better to keep your existing customer than having to go out and acquire your customer, which has another cost associated, whether that's marketing, sales calls, like you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's easier to keep a recurring paying customer because they've already done business with you. You're already in their system. So another thing with the businesses, some people do hate the process of onboarding a new vendor, a new contractor because it's tedious.
Especially big companies.
Yeah, of huge companies. Like you can go down a rabbit hole there talking about working for big companies, but it's a whole other beast and trying to learn from that. And because I've done a few with like some big companies and it's like a process. It's a process.
Yeah, for sure. Right. Like, you know, when whether I was a vendor for Microsoft or now I was working at Microsoft, it's always it's a huge win just to be in the system, right? Like if you go into the vendor management system and find you, that's half of the battle. then you could go through the proof of concept and all that.
And some companies will opt to just buy from someone who's already in the system because now the purchasing process is faster, right? So if you weren't in the system, it could take anywhere from like 30 days to 60 days to just get approved and then they can place the order, which then now the order's going out to like 90 or 120 days.
Oh my God.
If you're already in the system, hey, invoice and you're good.
yeah, because the person paying the bill is very different. They never even met each other, right?
Yeah,
it's just all system based. But like you said, it's so much better to get referrals and recurring revenue. Again, that's your business and entrepreneur hat on versus your network engineer hat on.
Yeah.
So I don't know how we get into that, just because I'm interested in business too. But let's reel it back and say wireless, because that's what your specialty is, and that's what you're known for in a community that you do so much content about. So my first question would be, what would be some of the simple things that engineers could do to make their wireless network a better experience for their user?
Yeah, the first thing is stop guessing at your configuration. I know what type of people listen to your podcast. Are they network engineers or?
I'd say it's all over the spectrum, but mostly if I have to guess, because you know podcasts are notorious for not giving you enough information. But I would say mostly network engineers, so maybe they're dealing with routers and switches.
Right. So if I put it into the context of routing and switching, and you're working with BGP, am I going to just randomly punch in some attributes and set the preferences differently just because I think it would work? No, that's the same thing. We don't want to do that with Wi-Fi, right? Yeah. So when it comes to something like BGP or OSPF, you're going to learn how it works. That's just what we do, right? People go through this route switch certification. Wi-Fi is the same thing. We have to know how Wi-Fi works. We have to know what those little configuration knobs are going to do. And if you don't know what they're going to do, then you don't know how your Wi-Fi is working. And a lot of the situations I walk into is because people are just changing settings and they're hoping it works better than the previous setting that they changed. And I think we just take Wi-Fi for granted because we can't see it, right? It's not something you could see. You just see the configuration items or no one's touching configuration items. They're just using the default settings and they just hope that works. And then, and a lot of cases it will work, but in larger environments and congested environments like San Francisco, New York, like these big cities, then we tend to get poor Wi-Fi experiences because of everyone's Wi-Fi just kind of stepping on each other.
Yeah. So what if you're in an unfortunate situation where you need to start troubleshooting of Wi-Fi? How would you do it, right? Like you walk into a situation, somebody's just put out their hands and say, hey, Royal, the Wi-Fi is not working or is not working optimally. Maybe it's the interference. What are some of the things that you would start looking at?
The first thing I always do is using the same troubleshooting methodology that you would with any other technology. So I would always first look at the scope of the issue. Like, is it just one person or are we talking about everybody in that area or everybody on that floor, everybody on that building? Because then that kind of helps you narrow down where you're going to troubleshoot. So if it's just one person having an issue, it's maybe just that one person having an issue.
it's a user error this time. Yeah. Well, you say it nicely, but...
Yeah, it's not really the user, but it's the device. So either the laptop or the device is just not using Wi-Fi properly. And we come across bugs, drivers all the time. And I know Apple had a huge bug in macOS that they didn't even publicly say it was a problem. Like people were having internet issues and were just saying it's Wi-Fi. And it turned out it was the OS that was the problem. And And if you go back to part one, this is why I say like knowing help desk, sysadmin, all that makes you a better network engineer. And in this case, that made me a better Wi-Fi engineer because I ruled everything out. I said, there's no Wi-Fi problem. There was no network problem. Like it's got to be the device. And the kicker there is when you ask questions. So I tell people, ask a lot of questions, get detailed answers. So when someone says, yeah, Wi-Fi is not working, I go, is it one person, two? Like, I don't know. You tell me like, that's like going to the doctor saying, hey doctor, my body hurts, fix it. But I'm not going to let you look at me. You just need to know what you need to do. Yeah. Prescribe me something, right?
Yeah.
Prescribing some medication without knowing what the issue is the same symptoms. Thing as going to Wi-Fi configuration. Like, let me just change the setting.
Right.
And so what you got to do is have a troubleshooting methodology. I look at, if it's a single device issue, I just look at that device. I don't even look at anyone else around unless they say multiple people have the problem. So then I started asking, all right, is it just a Mac issue or are we looking at Windows also having the same problem? And one of the problems I saw was, hey, it was only Mac laptops having the issue. Windows users, they're fine. And I said, well, kind of sounds like it's a Mac problem. If no one else is having an issue.
Right. And
then same thing with Windows. If they say, well, it's a Windows issue.
Right. What particular flavor of Windows?
Yeah. Or because a lot of times with Windows, we have the drivers that you have to update, right? On Mac OS, like Apple does all that. But with Windows, you have Intel drivers that come out regularly, and those are also fixing bugs and all that stuff. So I ask a lot of detailed questions, starting from the end user device, and then I move up towards the infrastructure. Unless someone says, hey, yeah, like this whole floor is down or this whole building's down, then you just kind of start at the infrastructure side first.
Right. Then you go and blame DNS. I'm just kidding.
And then it was
DNS. Yeah.
But it goes back to, you know, if I was a sysadmin and being a network engineer, I would know where to look, right? Like, okay, I see. I've rolled out Wi-Fi, but hey, I can't resolve host names. Sounds like a DNS problem. Why don't I just change the DNS server on the laptop, see if I can then resolve other host names? Oh, that works. Let me go back to the DNS server. And then you can kind of help the sysadmin go, hey, I can't resolve host names with this DNS IP address. Can you look at that? And at least you're handing it off a lot more cleanly. And so that's another thing too, is these clean handoffs to other team members.
Yeah.
I come across this a lot lately where it happened this morning where someone said, hey, network's down. Can you be a little bit more detailed? Because when I looked, they said they had all these alerts about the network being down. And I was like, I don't see the network down, but I saw specific hosts down, which led to a VPN tunnel being down, which then led to an interface on a router being down. It's just trying to get specifics out of people.
Yeah.
And I think if we're more specific, we're able to hand off things more easily, which then would be more efficient in troubleshooting. Because then without being more detailed, troubleshooting time just keeps extending.
Yeah, I think that's, you know how Steve Jobs, in one of my favorite, you know, commencement speech and speeches in general, talked about you can only connecting the dots looking backwards. So it's almost like when I hear about your path, it seems like the entrepreneur spirit that kind of relates back to your MSP experience, because you're always on customer side, you're trying to explain the benefits, and your troubleshooting skill really goes back to kind of started with the support at help desk. I was a support engineer too, so I could relate to something that you want to have a systematic approach so that you could fall back on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would say I attribute a lot of the where I am today to where I have been, because mm-hmm. in help desk, I was able to learn how to communicate with end users, right? So whenever somebody comes to me with an issue, I already know how to talk to them, how to speak to them, and what kind of questions to ask. I've worked with other network engineers who just don't have that soft skill that yeah. they just tend to hand over. They go, hey, here's a problem. I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, well, did you talk to the end user at least?
Right.
Like, you can't figure it out and you don't see a problem, like, talk to somebody.
Right.
Maybe it's not even a network issue with
right.
In a lot of cases, it's not. It's just if you ask the right question, you'll get an answer that points you to the right path instead of going down this rabbit hole. And that happened to me last week where someone was saying they were having, it was a handoff. They were saying, hey, we have Wi-Fi issues. And sorry, I'm just going to close the window because I think I'm getting Outlook messages.
No worries.
And they were trying to, it was another network engineer trying to hand it off to me. And they're saying, yeah, this user has Wi-Fi issues in this building. And the more I looked at it, well, for one, they just said this user. I didn't know who the user was. I didn't know where in the building they were. I didn't know what kind of device they were using. So I had to ask that question, like, well, give me a MAC address so I can look mm-hmm. it up. Mm-hmm. So they gave me a MAC address and I'm like, I don't see this guy connecting.
Yeah. Well, that there's the problem.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know if this, like, it's an actual device problem or what. Yeah. The APs are up. So that network engineer stopped talking to me. Mm. And I was like, I kept asking questions. I'm like, okay, he's not responding to me. So I got the end user contact info from the whatever the he ticket. Pasted in the email yeah. to me. So I reached out to the user and I said, hey, this network engineer told me you were having Wi-Fi problems in this building. Just want to talk to you, figure out what those problems are.
Right.
And then guess what? The user responded back with, yeah, I never had problems in that building. And actually, I've never had any Wi-Fi problems in that building. It was at home. Was like, if somebody just asked the question of where you had your Wi-Fi problem,
right,
we wouldn't have this conversation.
Right, right. Yeah.
So I think, basically, communication is the number one thing.
Yeah, the soft skills, right? Like, I mean, I was going to say, I mean, I'm not going to name any names, but I did work with people who think other people are idiots and just mm-hmm. say, you know, oh my God, this guy doesn't even XYZ. But the bottom line is nobody's stupid and nobody are most people are not intentionally trying to make your life miserable. So yeah. Part of what you said was just the customer service, right? Being calm, mm-hmm. having a system to fall back on and start asking questions and kind of segment where the problem is, then put a boundary toward it.
Yeah. Just have a process in place, something structured. And if that's not there, then put it in place. And you'll find that most of those problems start dwindling because now everyone's working cohesively.
Yeah. And I bet you actually perfect your process over the years, right? It's not like you have yeah. this golden process and mm-hmm. it's perfect to start with.
Yeah, exactly. And some of that too in that process is how I speak to users. So in the past, I used to always say, well, what's the ticket number?
Yeah.
Where's your ticket? You know, usually somebody wants you to submit a ticket, right? If it's yeah. if there's no ticket, then most people have this mentality of not going to work on it until you have a ticket.
Right.
I have no details, nothing. You're just telling me this problem. So nowadays, instead of sounding like a grumpy guy saying, hey, what's a ticket number?
Yeah.
I tend to say, hey, I ask for like at least two pieces of information. When did the problem happen? And what's the MAC address for the right. Wi-Fi issue? And then I say, okay, what's the ticket number so I can add those details to the ticket?
Right.
And then they say, there is no ticket. I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, okay. You know, I'll create the ticket for you, but I'm going to put you as the reporting person on that ticket. Yeah. And they're like, oh, okay. And it's just kind of like the subtle hint of, hey, next time, submit a ticket.
Yeah, look at the long term and doing customer service as well as getting to where you need to go, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So where do you see wireless in the next 1 to 3 years? What excites you the most, right? Like, I mean, I follow your blog. I think there's lots of going on. You just got back from a conference, I believe. So you're very excited about things. So I want to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so I think the industry is moving fairly quick with Wi-Fi, right? We just got Wi-Fi 6. People are barely getting their APs now that these long shipping delays are getting shorter. And then now there's Wi-Fi 6E, which has 6 gigahertz spectrum, but we barely have devices in 6 gigahertz. And as we're just getting 6 gigahertz devices, now there's Wi-Fi 7.
Yeah.
And so I feel like the industry is just moving a little too fast. But I think they've always done this. And there are these features and standards that have been around for many, many years that we're just starting to put into the standards for Wi-Fi. And I think it's going to lead to a lot of confusion right now because of the way they're doing the numbering. And Wi-Fi is also getting more complicated. So it's actually going to be harder to troubleshoot. So trying to figure out why something's happening the way it is isn't going to be as easy. And hopefully vendors can give us more insight. But with the way vendors are going, they're very AI focused, and I don't know whatever those other buzzwords are. That
large language model.
Yeah, and they just want to hide it or abstract it from you and just tell you what you need to do.
Right.
So I think it's just gonna basically make Wi-Fi suck a little bit more.
Yeah. Tell us how you really feel.
It's difficult. Wi-Fi was already complex as it is. It's just as people want more bandwidth throughput out of Wi-Fi, like they want it to be like wired speeds, right?
Yeah,
That adds complexity to it, and everything has to be a perfect scenario to get these top speeds. For me, I tend to focus more on stability rather than top performance, because if you look at what in the scenarios I'm in, a lot of the people are just looking for stability. They're not trying to push, you know, databases over Wi-Fi. They're not trying to do complex algorithms over Wi-Fi. So they just want to be able to move around without having Wi-Fi drop their video conferencing calls right now.
Right. So yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. And do you think that the industry standard is moving? Do you think they should slow down and stabilize what they have right now up to maybe like 6 or whatnot?
Well, the actual standards bodies, they move very slow. It's the marketing that is jumping the gun. So you have these companies talking about Wi-Fi 7 and routers that are going to, consumer routers are going to come out supporting Wi-Fi 7. And what I would caution people is when you watch YouTube and you see these people talking about how Wi-Fi 7 is so much better, you should ask them what Wi-Fi 7 capable device they are using to get those tests, because I don't know if there's one around.
I mean, if it comes from you, then I bet you can't find them in Best Buy, right?
I doubt it. I mean, I haven't looked lately, but I'm just barely trying to get Wi-Fi 6E working. But, you know, it's one of those things where companies need to make profit, and so they want to be first to market, and that's how it goes. But in a lot of organizations, usually being that early as like in that emerging technology, there's a certain risk you're going to have to take, right? You might not try to do a company-wide migration. Maybe you'll do a subset, but like warehouses, for example, where a lot of product is moved, those devices are still on the really old standards, like 802.11n. Like a few weeks ago, I was at a warehouse where they use tools that get their instructions over Wi-Fi, and they're just 802.11n based. So even upgrading to Wi-Fi 6E is not going to help them.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these retail, I remember when I was working a warehouse scenario, I mean, a lot of these are seasonal. So the warehouse tend to be very busy, you know, toward Q4 because Christmas time, and they start dusting off these new like symbol scanners and all these other stuff, like exactly what you're talking about, right? And then all of a sudden they couldn't connect. That's going to make the customer real happy, right?
Yeah, and sometimes those devices, it's the company doesn't want to replace all of them, right? Because they might have hundreds or thousands of them. That's a huge investment to upgrade to the latest version.
Right.
But for when I tell people as they're troubleshooting or trying to mitigate, is like try to do what you can with what you currently have. If you learn how to do design and troubleshooting, you may be able to adjust certain things in your existing environment to get bigger improvements that way, rather than having to fork up hundreds of thousands of dollars just to do swap out APs. Cause I've seen a couple of those where like, we want to swap out these APs cause these APs aren't working for us. And I'm like, well, what's vendor Y going to do for you that vendor X doesn't do? Like what exactly is the motive there?
Yeah.
The reason. And so
here comes
I've come into a bunch of scenarios where I say, don't replace it yet. I'll fix it.
And
there's like I get them on a little band-aid fix. I'm like, hey, you should upgrade because these are end of life. Like, you're not gonna get
end of support.
End of support, end of life, like security vulnerabilities. Like, you should upgrade. But I got you working for a little bit.
Right. But in the meantime, why don't you pay that delta of upgrade to me to packet 6? Because I just fixed it for Q4 and I become the hero. Yeah, I mean, that just brought back memories, right? I think what we did was we twisted the arms of the vendor. So these devices would become rentals versus versus we outright purchase them. And, you know, we had leverage, but at the same time, it was not everybody was able to do that. So, I truly enjoy our conversation, but we're coming up on the hour mark. Just also want to ask you, I mean, it's been a pleasure, and I want to ask you, is there any call to action that you want people to take away from our conversation?
Yeah, I think if you want to get into Wi-Fi, learn it a little bit more, I would highly recommend searching the CWNA, that is the entry-level certification for vendor-neutral wireless. I always tell people to go to a vendor-neutral Wi-Fi certification first, because that'll give you a very strong fundamental on how Wi-Fi works. When you do a vendor certification, for example, like Cisco wireless, it's going to be very heavy on how Cisco does wireless, on the controllers, on Meraki, all that, right? So you want to learn the fundamentals first, because then it'll set you up for success when you then go work on a controller, and you'll know what a certain setting will do to clients.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, let's go back to what we talked about in the last episode as well as this, and having structure, pathway of learning. And like you said, you started with Network Plus, right? So this is like kind of the Network Plus equivalent for wireless.
Yeah. And then from there, there's other certifications in wireless. It goes into more of the professional level. So you can really get to know analysis a little bit more on the troubleshooting side of Wi-Fi. Then you can go into design, security. Now there's things like IoT. And then eventually you can get your CWNE. And that entails writing essays and getting like endorsements. Like someone says, you know your Wi-Fi stuff.
Mm-hmm. Nice. I like that call to action, and I like the structure ways and the structure path of toward learning, vendor neutral, everything that fits into, I think, my principle as well. So, you know, Roel, where can people find you on social, or is there a blog site? Obviously, we're going to include all of these in the show notes.
Yeah, you can always find me on Twitter at Roel Dionisio. And then if you look at my name, also RoelDionisio.com, like you'll find everything there.
Okay, cool. I truly enjoy our conversation. Thanks for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Network Animation Nerds podcast today. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and all the other podcast platforms. Until next time. Bye-bye.